Everyone is on.
Introducing
Pretty Girls Love Real Estate. Stories of everyday women breaking barriers and building wealth through real estate.
Let's get it.
Boss. B-O-S-S.
Hello, hello. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Pretty Girls Love Real Estate podcast. I am your host, Jessica Washington, and I am super excited once again for my guest today. I have Miss Amelba Rodriguez. She is an associate broker up in Brooklyn, New York, and she's got extensive experience just working in the affordable housing space up there as well. So I just want to talk to her all about the scene and the affordable housing crisis up in New York and just the different programs that she's worked on over the years. So Amelba, how are you? Thank you for joining me.
I'm good. Thank you for having me and having this opportunity to share this my passion for real estate.
Absolutely. Thank you again. So diving right into it, how did you become interested in real estate?
So for me, real estate started in my childhood, watching my single mom just manage a multifamily house and managing with the tenants. And then just seeing that house just kind of disappear. She lost the house, but through her determination, she was able to buy multiple homes and then gave me the opportunity to actually manage a home. And I was like, oh, this is easy. I call myself a tenant whisperer. So I'm like, this is good. I can make it happen. So since then, my passion has grown.
Okay, absolutely. Yeah. If you are good at like selecting tenants, that's like half the battle. If you can screen and get good people on the front end, like you won't have as much turnover, you won't have as many problems, hopefully. So that definitely can make or break your experience.
All the time. I mean, the screening is important, but I just found communication is even more important. So regardless of, you know, you may wind up with a bad tenant or as they call professional tenants, as long as you have good communication and you share with them, like, this is what I need, this is what we need to do. I've had tenants where I have to negotiate and just like, look, you don't want to be here. You know, we're not in a mutual communication of you living here. How can we work together to get you to where you want and where I want? Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, people are like, okay, let's make it happen. So
absolutely. So let's talk about just the state of everything in New York right now. Like, obviously, everybody knows it's one of the most expensive places to live in the country. Wages are not necessarily increasing at the same rate as rents and prices of housing and everything. So just tell us about just the scene, like how drastic or dire is the situation with affordable housing in New York?
Well, New York, as you mentioned, is definitely, you know, the prices are high, but we consider them normal. So, you know, for a one family home, you're looking easy at $500,000. And from my understanding, comparison to that outside of New York is probably like a mini mansion. But here in New York, that may get you possibly a 3-bedroom house, maybe attached, maybe detached. And so for us, you know, having that problem, you know, something I've learned in my career, which was I was working in an organization where I help people purchase home below market value and through a lottery process, I've learned that that's probably like your best bet if you're someone who has great credit, a decent job, and have a good amount of money for down payment. Otherwise, it is going to be a struggle. And we're being hit just like anybody, all the other parts of the country, which is very low inventory, people purchasing homes, over asking. For me as a real estate associate broker, that's great. But if you're a first-time home buyer, it may get a little discouraging because you're just like, you know, you have your price. And so if people are outbidding you all the time, it gets a little like, okay, how am I ever going to buy a house? Mm-hmm. Especially if you're in a place where you want to move, like you want to get into that property and the interest rates are really like on your side. They're really low and you get a good rate. So for one thing I wanted to share is just like I shared with you a minute ago about the lottery process. It is a lottery process. You know, it's not guaranteed. And when I was working in this great organization where they develop properties and they also renovated first-time home buying properties for people, it was great. You had to have a certain affordability, which is your household had to be a certain size and AMI, which is average medium income. you had to meet some of those basic criterias. But once you pass that threshold, you're in the pool of lottery, which can be anywhere from 100 people to 4,000 people.
How many but, are usually available for those 100 to 4,000
people? Maybe like 10 or 20 properties.
And that's a citywide lottery?
It's a citywide lottery. So, you know, sometimes it's targeted in different areas. So it can be for New York. It's like either, you know, Brooklyn or Queens, where the majority of residential properties are available. And so if you were a lucky winner and got an opportunity, then you can get a house for below market. An example can be when I was leaving the organization, there was a house, a two-family house. It's currently worth $1.2 million, but that owner was able to purchase, that buyer was able to purchase the house like almost in the $400,000. And it was a brand new construction. Owner had two floors and a rental unit, and it was a corner property. Mm-hmm. And, you know, no one, that's unheard of in New York, a $400,000 two-family home.
Wow.
That's like almost non-existent. So this gave this person this opportunity to be a homeowner. They obviously had to go through classes for a first-time home buying and also to be a landlord in order for them to qualify for this, which is important because education, if you don't know, everybody wants to be a landlord sometimes just for the income, mm-hmm. but you have to be educated on the process. So that's one thing that I really valued about this program, but you have to be ready. You can this her process took almost 2 years.
Wow.
She was very patient and diligent.
So from the you said there was a seller in this instance, and then you also mentioned that was possible to do it with new construction. So how's the seller or the organization that's selling the house, how are they making money if they're selling it at such below market rate?
So they have there's tax abatements on the property sometimes. There's also subsidies that are being funded by the state that will then reduce the price, right? But the new owner, right, the first time home buyer has to live in this house. Sometimes it's 10 years, sometimes it's 15 years. This has to be their primary residence. So there is always a caveat to this, right? But if your goal is to, you know what, I really want the American dream of purchasing a home and having my own home, then 10 years can go really quickly. And then after that, there's a first right of refusal where the organization gets to be the first one to purchase. Otherwise, you can put it back on the market at market value. Okay. Some programs do ask you to leave it, you know, as a subsidy, so you can still sell it back, but you may not be able to sell it at the market value, but you'll still make your money back. Mm-hmm. But I mean, in the interim, you're living in a home that's brand new most of the time or fully renovated at like way below the market value, right. But at value, if you was to sell it.
Can you kind of stack these programs on top of other like federal programs like NACA or FHA, anything like that?
Well, with this particular program, I wouldn't say you could stack it, but like, for example, in New York, we have what we call Home First, mm-hmm. which is Home First is a grant that you can receive up to $40,000 towards your purchase, right? So that can go towards your down payment or your closing costs. So that's one thing you can put in there. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the banks that we work with loan officers who are focused in these low to moderate income communities where they also have some down payment assistance money. So that's another set of money that you just got mm-hmm. to help you in this purchase, right? And so NACA would be a separate entity. That's a whole nother program on its own. And so you wouldn't be able to, put NACA in play, or possibly, but because it's a lottery, it's only for those properties and it's through our housing authority. So sometimes through the housing authority. So you have to be part of that versus NACA. So NACA would be a completely different program.
Got you. Okay. So you worked for a number of different like affordable housing organizations, like we just mentioned. What are some of the other programs that you helped develop or kind of spearheaded or grew as you were there?
So yes, I worked for Bridge Tree Development Corporation, which serves Central Brooklyn. It's a nonprofit faith-based organization located in Bedford-Stuyvesant, Brooklyn, before Bedford-Stuyvesant was the hot spot. And you know, Brooklyn Love is going, and everyone's like, wow, this is fabulous. But back then it wasn't. But in the interim, it was a place where people of color, you know, and they're still there in Brooklyn, needed some support and resources. So that organization started with developing affordable housing as well, but they grew into providing more resources. So I worked in developing the homeownership department, which helped people, first-time home buyers, kind of get that counseling. So it was a HUD housing counseling agency where, as a counselor, we provide free services to someone who's purchasing their home. We have no interest in the purchase, because we're, you know, just there to assist. So that's always helpful. We also helped foreclosure homeowners, people facing foreclosure, either keep their home or help them transition out. Mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10, it was to keep their home. Nobody ever went to lose their home. And then also financial education. We provided services for seniors. We developed, it's called Quincy Senior Residence. It's like about 53 unit building for seniors. So being able to be a hub there to help them age in place gracefully. We worked with tenants. We did tenant associations, block associations, develop economic development work on some merchant corridors. So, and youth, we work with summer youth program. We help youth get internships. So it's because of the community-based organization, the goal is to make sure, how do we resource and support and sustain the residents in these communities that we serve? It was definitely a great time working there and being able to be hands-on and kind of just see the fruits of our labor. It'd be so great to see a homeowner be able to come in and say, oh my God, I'm about to, on the verge of losing my home, but being able to get their loan modified to like 3%, mortgage payment 30% less, you know, their gross income, and keeping their home. Like, it was just amazing. So those are some of the things that I was able to do under that organization in that leadership position.
That's awesome. I mean, obviously people want to own their home from a, you know, financial perspective, but it's like, it seems like the organization is really about building the community and keeping like that whole vibe in the community. It's not just about, all right, keeping your home or buying or selling your home. Like, you have the youth advocacy programs, you're helping people out there get jobs, you're helping seniors, you know, maintain their independence wherever they are. So that's all awesome to keep that like community aspect intact as well, because there's a lot of people that come into these lower income communities and move us out and gentrify and put whatever they want that's not necessarily goes with the aesthetic that the community had before.
Right. Our focus was to keep the cultural fabric intact, right? Making sure that maybe we have newcomers, fine, you're welcome, but you have to understand this community has been here for a long time and has been there during the time when people didn't want to be there. And so sharing with them what the culture is of that community and giving them that access to embrace it as opposed to trying to take it away.
Absolutely. So you mentioned there, like with that organization, y'all were basically a third party. You didn't have really interest in the transactions, but now you're an associate broker. So you're very involved and, you know, really trying to advocate on behalf of your client specifically. So how's your experience a little bit different now?
Well, now I have some more flexibility. You know, when you're working in a nonprofit organization, there's limitations, right? Because you have funded by the different funding streams that require you to do certain things a certain way. Not to say that I'm out there in the wild, wild west or anything crazy. I still have my integrity, but using my experience from community development work, being able to really both on the buyer's end and on the seller's end to really use that customer service and resource, right? So for first-time home buyer, you know, I call them first-time home buyer legacy buyers, right? Because you're building a legacy as you buy that house for the first time, either for yourself or for the people coming after you. So really educating them through that process and being the quarterback in that process. So for me, it's like people think, oh, I'm just going to sell my home, you know, a realtor's just going to sell or find me a home. But we're the quarterback of the deal. We have to make sure from the beginning to the end that everything is intact. I'm like the nucleus. I will contact everybody and anybody to make sure that everything goes, you know, as planned, or, you know, also encourage people as they go through the process. to get them to the end. So for me, it's just been the opportunity to use what I've learned, but and build off of that, but be more flexible in it and not be as limited as I was when I was working in the organization.
So what strategies or what advice you're giving to your buyers now? Because obviously it's a seller's market, inventory is low. I know here in DC and Maryland, like buyers are having to make offers well above asking, no contingencies, sometimes sight unseen. So how is everything looking up there in terms of buyers?
I tell people best and finest, right? This is not the time where you're like, oh, I'm going to, you know, have a little money to the side and I'm just going to keep it. No, you're coming with the real number. Like if this is not the real number, then let's not even bother. Right. Because at this point, there's no more like lowballing the price. You're either at the asking price or you're going above. Mm-hmm. If that's not your intention, then you might as well not even bother viewing the property or even putting the time into it, because you don't want to walk away discouraged or disappointed, right? But I also want the strategy of looking at properties and seeing, you know, okay, how long has this property been in the market? Believe it or not, even though the inventory is low, there's still some properties that are on the market longer than the 24 hours that some properties have been on. And so the strategy is then now, okay, there may be some issues with that property. What are the issues, right? And then will you be willing to, you know, maybe do a renovation loan? Like now we got to think a little bit differently than the traditional purchase, the traditional FHA or conventional loan, where we have to go to a renovation loan. Mm-hmm. So I strategize with my buyers just to kind of see like, okay, here are your options, right? How do we present you the best? Even now I have a buyer and she's actually a NACA buyer. When I presented her offer, just because now we got to figure out how do we stand out from the rest of these other buyers. I wrote like a whole personal statement for her as part of my offer, mm-hmm. who she was, what she was trying to do, how, you know, her background in regards to her income, her employment, as well as, you know, how much money she was making. Like I showed all of these different, I kind of just gave like almost like a presentation without having her picture on it, I felt. But that's one of my strategies, because now I had to personalize this and be like, look, this person is really serious about purchasing this home and we can get you to closing way quicker than, you know, someone else. Mm-hmm. So that's my strategy for the buyers. And for the sellers, it's just like, listen, you know, the house has to be a showpiece. It's no longer your house. It's a product. Mm-hmm. And how do we market this product at its best, right? So I come in, we do a scan of the property and we see what things may, you know, people may not like, or things that we may have to put to the side. Sometimes I offer a pre-showing inspection, because there may be some things that, you know, the inspector may catch that I may not have caught or something. I'm like, you know, this doesn't look right. We should get it inspected so that when a home buyer does an inspection, we're not surprised. We're very clear on what this issue is, and then we know how to, you know, we have a strategy on handling it. I do the virtual tours, the photography, all of those different things, because now it's, you know, people are like, you want them to pay top dollar, then you really got to put it in to show that this is a property that is worth the top dollar that you're asking for. So those are my strategies, just coaching people through this process, and then once they get them through that part, then it's just getting them to the closing.
Right, for sure. Now we definitely seeing with the market being so crazy, like the people, as far as the realtors and brokers and whatnot, the people that are experienced versus the people that are trying to jump in and take advantage of a moment, because there's a lot of different ways to be creative to make your transactions happen on both ends. So
yes, definitely.
Sounds like you're doing your thing. So, you mentioned earlier about, you know, having multifamily properties. Are you still personally invested in any other properties?
I am, and I'm so grateful. Like I said earlier to my mom, I got the opportunity to inherit a property in my early 20s. I still have it. And you know, I'm still in my early 20s though. I still have this property, and it's been kind of like what I call my lesson. It has taught me so much. And I just bought a couple of other properties, and now I'm looking into investing out of state with a group called WCR, Affordable Developments, which is Women Crushing Real Estate. And we're always, you know, sharing and looking for investors, but we're looking to purchase multifamily homes, sometimes with tenants or without, but on the auspices of helping them build their generational wealth, right? We're a community development investor, right? We want to make sure that people are not being pushed out, but that they're being educated to purchase this home. So that's where I'm at now.
Do you have any particular markets in mind outside of New York?
I'm looking at Pennsylvania. I'm looking over in Northwest Pennsylvania, as well as, you know, Philly, as well, you know, Baltimore. That's a sweet spot for a lot of people, but Texas, going on the West Coast. Just a couple of things out there. Even Alabama, I've heard of some nice things over there. So just kind of putting my ears to the streets and then putting my calculations together. I always tell people it's not necessarily, you know, we all try to run for the hot market, right? And if you're someone who's doing this all the time and that's your strategy, that's great. For me, it's about the numbers. I have a number that I want. And if the numbers meet it, you know, if the house that I'm looking at meet those numbers, then I'm fine, right? Because right now I'm in the long term. I'm not in the fix flip. I'm in the how do I create passive income so that, you know, when it's time for me to be like, okay, I don't want to do this anymore. There's income coming in and I'm not concerned. It's like a well-oiled machine working on its own.
Right, exactly. And that New York money goes a long way. The markets that you're mentioning.
It does.
So that's great. You have any other like upcoming events or initiatives or any other like groups that you're a part of that have anything going on?
Definitely. I shared with WCR, you know, that we're working, that's WCR, affordabledevelopments.com, but that is pretty much, we're in the initial stages of it and building it out, looking for joint venture partners. Specifically women, you know, we're open to men, but it's just getting women, and you don't have to be someone who is in real estate or wants to be like in the throes of it. It's just, you may have some funds, 401k money or some money to the side that you decide, you know what, I would like to see my money work for me. And so that's a opportunity for you to do that. Right. And the second thing is I'm part of, Buy Black for Life. Currently is a Facebook Live page, but it's pretty much, you know, I'm on the advisory board and being able to support them in also real estate, getting that information out there, not only in New York, but actually is national. And so they're always doing different promotions and helping Black business owners promote their business and provide them support and resources to grow their business. Mm-hmm. So there you go, two more. I'm also part of Black Lives Matter Fund, real estate fund. And so they're currently working on a project here in New York in the Bronx. They're breaking ground soon in regards to construction. They're doing a multifamily home, actually two multifamily homes. And the goal of Black Lives Matter Real Estate Fund is to support Black-owned developers and real estate professionals to put their money together to help each other kind of push this, you know, reduce this, how you say, the racial wealth gap. Right. So we're starting now in the Bronx. Our next project will be in Philadelphia, where there's a particular property that has been under distress, where it was owned, like the city's trying to take it away from its owner, which was owned by African-American male. So, and then lastly, I'm gonna be working on my landlord workshops, which will be coming up in the fall. So I'll share that with you when it comes out. But one of my passions and just seeing my mom as a landlord is people looking at being a landlord as not a hobby or a second job, looking at it as a business. Mm-hmm. The minute that you change your mindset to it being a business, the more lucrative it can be for you versus it being something that, you know, like you kind of fell into because the loan officer said, hey, get a multifamily and you can increase your income and you can earn, you know, you can get a bigger house. Mm-hmm. Looking at it as a business. So working on that and hopefully to have it out in the fall where we can educate people about the process.
I That's awesome. And then I know some people are even scared to be a landlord, or they're not scared, but they don't want to be because they're like, oh, I don't want to deal with tenants calling me and dealing with problems and issues, blah, blah, blah. I just want to worry about myself. But obviously, like you said, like as a business, like it could be very lucrative. It could be very rewarding. So
yes. And if some, I mean, you can also hire a property manager, but even if you hire a property manager, you still, it's still a business because now you are, you hired somebody to do the work, which is great, but you still got to manage them to make sure that they're doing the work accordingly, right? So people, you know, and I got that, this idea from just watching my mom, but also when I was doing foreclosure prevention, a lot of homeowners were just not equipped to be landlords. Some people were just paying their tenants' utility bills. And it got them to a point where they weren't able to pay their mortgage because the utility bill was so high. You know, they had paying light for somebody, electricity, you know, summertime's here, and the person is living in like a central air apartment where they left their air conditioner on all day while they're at work so that when they get home, it's nice and cool, but the owner's paying for that. So, you know, so that to me is like, okay, how do you really manage this so that you can have more money in your pocket and still have good tenants and still manage the property?
Absolutely. Well, definitely going to be looking out for that because that's helpful information that everybody needs, especially women of color that are looking to get into this field, you know, now with everyone interested in investing in real estate because the interest rates are so favorable now. So appreciate that. And then all the other things that you have going on, you're booked and busy. So that's awesome.
Just, you know, for me, it's just how do we give back, right? And so it's great to be a real estate associate broker, but at the same time, it's like, it's my testimony, right? So things I've learned, how do I share that with other people so that people can then grow, right? So that's my goal, just being able to help people build that generational wealth or build, you know, their wealth for themselves to build their community.
Yep. I always say, if you help somebody else learn something about getting wealthy, like everything is going to come back to you tenfold. So serve and then it'll come back to you.
Definitely.
All right. Well, yeah, this has been great. Let me move on to the last segment of the show, which is called The Fabulous Four. And it's just four questions that I ask every guest. So just go for it, whatever comes to your mind. So the first question is, what's your favorite book about real estate? Or if you don't necessarily read about real estate, if you have something in self-development or personal finance or business, anything like that, that you enjoy reading?
Well, definitely for me, I don't have a fave real estate book. I do have a fave podcast, which is called Bigger Pockets. Mm-hmm. Nobody should. They're very simplistic in how they share the real estate process. So I really enjoy them and the things that they offer. And then for me, just I was just sharing a recent book that I read was The Power of TED, which is really good about just, you know, self-development and not having a victim mentality and having more of a victor mentality and being a creator in your space. Because in real estate, we're always creating. How do we figure out how to, you know, keep us afloat and be sustainable. So it has been a very good book. And The Alchemist, that's my all-time favorite. I read it again.
classic. And you know, Bigger Pockets, they have some books as well. Like I know a particular one I've read that was really good was about long-term, like long-distance investing. Mm-hmm. So they got a lot of different resources, but the podcast is definitely really good, like you said.
Definitely.
The second question is, what advice would you give to your younger self just getting started with your career?
I would say to my younger self, trust the process. Trust the process and its timing. Mm-hmm. So we all say trust the process, but sometimes it's, you know, it's a timing issue. So when I first started real estate 100 years ago, no, many moons ago, you know, I was a real estate, I got my associate broker's license very quickly. I was a corporate broker, so I had my own office and agents, and I was realtor of the year and all these things. I was on the women's council, board of realtors, everything. And then, you know, I transitioned out. And at that time, I thought, okay, this is not good. But as I reflect back in life, it's just kind of like the timing was fine, right? I got an opportunity to expand my horizon, still in real estate, but a different segment of real estate. And I was able to build my education, my experience, and my community development muscle to be able to not only help my clients a lot better, actually, both my buyers and my sellers and my friends and myself. So I trust the process and the timing. It may not always seem like, you may feel like you got, you know, detoured and it didn't work out, but it's like full circle because I'm back again, but with, you know, more experience, more a sphere of influence. So
absolutely, that's awesome. Yeah, it's real estate is definitely a long game. Like, everyone wants to go out there and jump out and make all this money, which you can, but it's definitely about building those relationships, you know, just learning about your business, learning the industry. So it takes a little bit of time, but like she said, trust the process and it'll be worthwhile.
Definitely.
Ooh, the third question is, what topic in real estate do you want to learn more about?
Real estate development, like residential real estate development. I remember I took this class a while ago, and but it was a while ago, and they spoke about just building your own community. Like, this guy had, the instructor just mentioned about he had built all these homes, and he actually named the street after himself. I was like, wow, that's really cool. But there's a woman, her name is Pam Brown Courtney. Mm-hmm. She's out in Little Rock, Arkansas, and she built 51 homes of community, and she continues to build, and she's a real estate developer. So she's it's very inspiring to see that. And so I would love to build a community for low to moderate income individuals where they can feel safe, is, you know, full of resources, but being able to really achieve that homeownership and feel comfortable, right? So that's something that's a long-term goal. You know, every day I chip away at it, but that's something I definitely want to get into.
All right, awesome. So that's a great segue into the last question, which is to give a shout out to another woman in real estate.
I gave one shout out, that's Pam. I don't know her, I hope she's out there. I hope to get to meet her. But a woman that I would definitely want to shout out is, she's actually my partner. Her name is Deetra, because I always say her name wrong. But Deetra Harris, she's out in California from Strive Real Estate. And she's actually helping out the homeless community out in the Bay Area in California. She has an investment, a real estate investment club, which is free, which is great, because a lot of times these real estate investment clubs, you got to pay membership. And she's offering her resources and her experience for free, as well as she's building her real estate portfolio. She's been amazing. She's very humble. And I'm just happy to be in her space. We're actually going to meet later on because, like we said, with her and I, we're working on the WCR, and we're actually going to be meeting soon to look at a property that we're interested in Pennsylvania. So who says you can't buy out of state and also have partners out of state? She's only in California, but she's an amazing woman.
Love it. The power of technology. And that's, I always say that's one of the blessings in disguise of the pandemic. Like, people have gotten more comfortable with working with people that are not in their immediate vicinity, looking at things not in their immediate vicinity, since we had to kind of like shut down for that time and you didn't know when you would be able to get out and about into the world again. So I would say that's one of the positive experiences that's come out of all this.
I agree. I mean, I would have never met her if I was California. Like, I haven't even been to California in like so many years.
100 years, no. No, I was going to say it's been 100 years.
100, that's my life. It has been 100 years.
All right, so how can people get in touch with you and contact you if they, you know, want to learn more about what all you have going on?
Sure. So they can find me on IG, which is the number 4, the love of real estate, with an S, real estates. And then also I'm on Facebook, same thing, the number four for the love of real estate without the S. And if they want to just, you know, shoot me a text or call me, I don't mind, at 646-787-5899. And then I have a website under my maiden name, which is emelvamartinez.com. So.
All right. Awesome. Many ways to get in touch with her. So tap in, everybody. So any last words of wisdom for the listeners out there?
Words of wisdom. Just pretty much continue to watch this podcast so you can get the resources that you need, right? To be a real estate investor. And also just to meet other women. Like, I think a lot of the times, and this is why this is a perfect platform, we don't see a lot of women talking to other women, right, about their real estate journey. And it doesn't necessarily have to only be about sales. It's just a numerous amount of ways that you can be in real estate and be successful and enjoy it. So I would just say, you know, continue to, for people to continue to build their network. There's all these meetups, and just continue to learn about what it is that you want to do in real estate and build on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you for those kind words. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Yeah. Thank you. This has been an awesome conversation. I learned a lot, and I'm hoping everybody out there learned a little bit more as well. So thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, everybody. Thank you to my guest, Miss Emelva Rodriguez. She's up in New York. You know, if you have any questions about real estate or affordable housing or anything like that, especially up in that area, reach out. She's given you numerous ways to contact her, so definitely tap in. But thank you again for being on the show, and we'll see you all next time.